Welcome to the Commonwealth Club. I'm George Hammond, Chair of the Humanities Forum, and I'd like to welcome our live audience here in San Francisco and our radio and online audiences. It's my pleasure to introduce Michael Dillon, a very great Irish dance teacher and authentically from Ireland. And he has brought some of his championship-level girls here to first explain something about Irish dancing, the history of it and so on, and also to show you the different dances and to have them demonstrate what this very disciplined and very interesting and beautiful form of dance is in the history of it, of course. So, Michael Dillon.
Hello. So, as George said, thank you, George. I'm Michael Dillon, and I'm from County Clare in Ireland. Is anybody else here from Ireland? No? Are we an Irish dancer? Were you an Irish dancer? See, that puts pressure on me now that you were an Irish dancer. I can't just waffle on, so... So I had this fantastic audio-visual done, but obviously this is really intimate and I can't do it, so I'm just going to have to waffle on. So really, if anybody has any questions throughout the evening, please just put your hand up and ask me. The first thing is, yes, a heckler in the audience.
My father is from Ireland. Does that count?
It does, absolutely. Apparently, this is Emer Broderick, who also teaches with our academy. How many million people are in America? There are 4.1 Irish million Irish people in Ireland and 32 million of us here in America. So,
yes. Started from only 10 about 100 years
and
ago.
And they're all wearing green today, and the only lady that's correct is this lady here in the front row in the blue. Because actually, the official colour of Ireland is St. Patrick's blue. It's not green at all. And this is St. Patrick's blue. If you notice our national emblem, it's a harp on a blue background. It's not on a green background. So, well done. So we're going to start off. Today is St. Patrick's Day, and most of our dances are named after the actual tune that we dance to. So there is a tune called St. Patrick's Day. It's got 8 bars, and we'll talk about bars later on, but it's got 8 bars in the step and 14 in the second step. So it's an odd number. And it was made up by one of the dancing masters. And we'll talk about dancing masters in a little while. So we'd like to welcome some of our dancers to dance to set us off with St. Patrick's Day. This is Fiona and Dania and Camille and Taryn and George's daughter Annie in the pink. And Emer forgot the music. That's not St. Patrick's Day, by the way. Was anybody at the parade at the weekend? At the parade? No?
Sorry.
Percent preparation and what is it they say? And we're live on the radio, Emer, you know that, right? Which apparently I didn't know either until about 2 minutes ago.
There's probably a clear seat up over there on the front.
So while the music is being prepared.
It's not wasting time.
Have you got it?
Question?
Yeah.
What are we going to see? The first dance, what is it?
It's called St. Patrick's Day. And it's a traditional set dance which was made up by one of the traveling dancing masters that used to travel around Ireland giving classes before the Gaelic League in 1893, I believe, was set up to formalise the whole thing. So we used to have dancing masters that would travel. Most of them came from the southwest, from County Kerry. I'm sure some of you have relations in County Clare. And they would literally row across the Shannon to County Clare, and they would travel from village to village giving classes, and people would take the door off its hinges and put it on the dirt floor, and they would teach these dances. And the whole thing was you couldn't show the sole of your shoe. That was, so now we're all kicking above our heads, but back then you weren't allowed to show the sole of your shoe. And we'll talk, the big question is, why do we have our hands by our side? And I'll try and answer that in a minute, but there is really no answer.
Okay.
Good to go. Great. Thank you, ladies. Well done. So, the big question we get asked all the time is why we dance with our hands by our side. And to be honest, there is really no answer. Recording of Irish dance was really very bad because generally it was the only records we have go back to about the 16th, 17th century. And they were made by English people coming to Ireland to report on the state of Ireland at the time. And of course it was a very impoverished country, and so they tended to write about the poverty and the state and the local people, and dancing was way down the list really of what. So there's actually very little record. I mean, the kind of romantic image, we love English bashing. I mean, we do. I mean, personally, I think we can thank them for an awful lot. I mean, and I think the state of Irish dancing today is in no small part due to the English, but we do love to bash them. We love to see their soccer team lose, and we love to see their rugby team lose, and all of us are married to English people, and me included, so it's a bit of a love-hate thing. But they did introduce what were called the penal laws, and they were really laws that were brought in to impoverish the Irish people, and that's probably why you're all here today. If you were caught speaking the Irish language, if you were caught playing Irish music, if you were caught doing Irish dances, you were literally hanged. The Irish Catholic religion at the time was huge. Priests, there are secret hidey holes all over the country where the priests were hidden. There's mass rocks up. You had to walk miles to get to mass, to be honest, because they were always stuck in the middle of a forest up a hill somewhere, and those mass rocks are still there today. So if you go to Ireland, you can actually find them. So one of the theories, and my favorite, is that while the soldiers were walking past the window, they would be teaching steps to each other while seated. So that's the theory I like. The other one is the church they were draconian in the fact that you couldn't touch, you couldn't show any affection publicly. And that was right across Europe, to be honest. So really, hands were never part of the whole equation. So I think that's my favorite, but we have no explanation, really. So Irish dancing is called step dancing. The reason it's called step dancing is that every step is generally 8 bars of music long. Have you any musicians? So they're always exactly the same music. They're danced in either real time, jig time, slip jig, or hornpipe, or single jig. And we have heavy jigs, and so there's a lot of jigs. And the way, can anybody tell the difference between a reel and a jig? Good. So, the way you are going to be able to tell the difference. Bacon in Ireland is called, so for breakfast, and it's a rasher rather than a slice of bacon. And if you can say the words rashers and sausages over and over and it fits to the music, that's a jig. Because it's in 6/8 time, rashers and sausages, rashers and sausages, rashers and sausages. That's a jig. If you can't, it's a reel. You're pretty. So, we'd like to see a reel, please. Can we have a reel? So this is in 4/4 time. And the reason it's step dancing is everything is 8 bars long. And if you notice, they're going to dance everything starting with the right foot, and then they're going to repeat it on the left foot. So we do everything. And that's why they say Irish dancing, and funnily enough, disco, they reckon is by far the best form if you have a good math student. They tell you that this... works the same side of the brain. I guess because you have to do right and left. So this is Jenna and Laura. She wore green specially. And then they would eventually come back to you in about 6 months' time. And there wasn't many of them, but we still dance their dances today, right from the 1700s. And those traditional sets, and St. Patrick's Day that we did at the beginning was one of those traditional set dances. And it doesn't matter if you're in Hong Kong, or Australia, or Norway, or San Francisco, they are exactly the same today as they were when they were taught by those dancing masters traveling around Ireland. Then in 1893, the Gaelic League was set up to basically promote Irish culture, because the Irish culture was being lost under the British rule. And so it was mainly for literature and music, and Irish dancing to a lesser extent, but probably it's had more of an effect worldwide on Irish dancing than anything else. So most of the dancing masters came from Munster, which is the six counties stuck on the bottom left-hand side, right over to the bottom right. That would be Cork, Kerry, Clare, Tipperary, Waterford, and Kerry. Kerry is those four pieces that stick out the bottom, and that's where most of those dancing masters came from. When the Gaelic League was set up, funnily enough, it was in London, in England. The Irish in London really took on the role of the Gaelic League. And their influence back in 1893 promoted Irish dancing all the way, and you can help me here because I don't know the pronunciation. Is it Butte Montana? There was a branch of Butte Montana in 1893. Promoting Irish dancing. That's how far it reached. And then really until Riverdance. Has anybody been to see Riverdance? Really until Riverdance changed our world. I would not be standing here today if it was not for Michael Flatley. Thank you, Michael. So so we were all teaching in Ireland, and we had this little Irish dancing was basically all the Irish communities from Australia to California and New Zealand. And then in 1997... the Eurovision Song Contest, which is a contest that every country in Europe enters a song every year. And it's televised, and it's got the biggest television audience in the world. And Ireland has won it, I'm proud to say, more times than any other country in Europe. And so in 1997, while the judges are making their mind up, there was a five-minute segment which Michael Flatley, who is from Chicago, he's not Irish at all, although he's got a better Irish accent than I do, and Gene Butler from New York, they actually put together this little interval piece, which really took Irish dancing global. Now we have 1,800 teachers all over the world, and literally they are in Japan, and Hong Kong, and the United Arab Emirates, and Brazil, and Mexico. And now our World Championships, which we're going to in Montreal in a couple of weeks' time, it is really a global phenomenon. And so I got asked, I was honored at the time, to be asked to go to Scandinavia, and I thought, really? Scandinavia, Irish dancing? And I got there and I said to them, why Irish dancing? Why has Riverdance had this impact on you world? And they said, because our religion, the Lutheran religion, in a lot of Northern Europe particularly, it was a sin to think about dancing. And so they lost their own folk culture and their own folk dancing. And of course, because of the Vikings back in the 10th century, that was the nearest thing they had to dancing of their own. So they completely adopted Irish dancing. It's like when we joined the European Union in 1970. I remember in the news that we're going to lose our culture, and in fact, Europe adopted the Irish culture instead. So, so all over Germany, we have Irish. I was talking to George earlier. A friend of mine teaches in Kaiserslautern, and we have all the American Army bases, and all the kids there do Irish dancing, and then they come back here in this way. So anyhow, let's move on to heavy dance. We have two types of dancing. We have light dancing, and we, which you just saw in the ghillies or the light shoes, and that's generally done to reel or slip jig. A slip jig is only now danced by females or women. It used to be a male dance, funnily enough, but now it's just women. And we have jigs and hornpipes, which are done in these heavy shoes. So can we have jig or hornpipe? Jenna, would you like to do a step of a jig, please? Oh, I'm sorry.
We have jigs coming out, though.
Great. Perfect. So these are heavy jigs. They're generally danced a little bit slower, so even though it's still in 6-8 time. Yes?
You mentioned that showing the songs that they did.
They did. That's what I'm saying. Already, over the years, it's just developed. But traditionally, and then we still have, there's three types of Irish dancing, actually, in Ireland. There's shanos, which means old style, and that's very kind of, still very loose. And then we have traditional dancing, which is more what we saw. And then we have the modern Irish dancing, which got crazy. Quite frankly, and probably because of the pressure of competition. You know, I mean, we have to be better and higher and stronger, and, you know, somebody somewhere read a book that you got to cross your feet, and so they're over here, and the leg has to be up here, and so now it's just the way it's developed. And, you know, it's kept it alive because we really have adapted change, and Irish dancing is doing one of the few folk cultures, I think, that has allowed itself to change, and which is why it's so popular all over the world. Just outside Dublin. And funnily enough, fought by the Dutch King William and the English King James. So the Irish really weren't involved at all. But it was Protestants versus Catholics, and that's where the whole thing started. And I mean, the Dutch soccer team still wears orange, if you notice. And of course, the Catholics lost. And at that point, we had all of these Irish lords fighting with the British. And so those lords had no choice but to flee. And they fled, of course, to France, being our Catholic ally. And they went to the French court. And in the French court, they found all of these fantastic court dances. And so today, team dancing-wise, we have what are called ceilidh dances, which are ceilidhs or dances, or, you know, they were just social gatherings, which tended to happen at the crossroads because nobody had any halls and we didn't have any, you know. Public gathering spaces. I mean, the gentry had them in their big houses and they had their own dance halls, but we didn't have them as Irish Catholics at the time. And so the lords went to the French court, they brought their musicians, one of whom was a man called Thurlough O'Carolan, who was a blind harpist. He was from gentry, he was from a wealthy family, and he got smallpox as a child. He lost his sight. And his nice family bought him a horse, a harp, and a servant. And they sent him off around Ireland. And you can still hear his tunes today. The chieftains play a lot of Thurlough O'Carolan. Most of the harp music that we hear today is Thurlough O'Carolan's music. And he made up a lot of the Irish dance tunes that we still dance to today. And so, of course, they're in the French court, and Napoleon's in power, and he's fighting Wellington. And so a lot of our tunes are based on that whole French-Irish connection. We have dances called Downfall of Paris, Bonaparte's Retreat, Madame Bonaparte. And so Annie, George's daughter, and Fiona, I think, can they dance Downfall of Paris, which is one of our set dance tunes. This was written by Thurlow or Carolyn himself. Covered in little tiny tacks. So it was hundreds of little nails, and we had a shank in the shoe, and then we had a leather sole, and we used to hammer a coin into the side of the heel. So every time the heels pass each other, this should make a noise. So when you're judging, when you're dancing in the competition, every time you miss one of those clicks, you lose a few points. So somebody came up with a really bright idea. If we break the shank on that shoe, this is Ned, was actually a girl from New York. And if you put it in a washing machine with two full bottles of fabric conditioner, that'll make the shoe really flexible, and then you can go up onto point. And so you know that some of, right now the girls who are up on point, that's a whole new thing. That's really not old. So the dance form has developed as the technology of the shoe has changed as well. So thank you. Competition was actually in 1898. And we know what a competition is called in Irish dancing? A fesh, well done. F-E-I-S is a fesh. And the first fesh was in a place called Macroom in County Cork, and it had six competitors. And then I think the next one was in Glasgow in 1902, and the next one was in London maybe in 1907. And those feshes in County Cork, there's still two left. And they're the oldest fesh in the world. And I had the honor of judging one about 6 years ago. And the lady running the fesh was talking about how... And a fesh in those days was everything, from bread making to pipe bands to, you know, now it's just dancing. But back then, and still in those two little feshes in County Cork, they had everything. And so I was out in the open air and they were dancing up in the back of a lorry. But the older people were talking about how they remember back in the 1920s, the British flying over and actually shooting at the fesh from, you know. So they have an amazing history, these two little feshes. And so now, we have our World Championships has 1,800 competitors, I think, coming from all of something like that. Some crazy, no, actually, 3,500. I got my numbers mixed. 3,500 competitors from all over the world descending on Montreal and Canada in 2 weeks' time. And it lasts for 9 days of hell. Or I get up every morning, 6 o'clock, and I don't get back. But it covers everything from team dancing to figure dancing to dance dramas, and it's really, and it's called an Oireachtas, and Oireachtas is a gathering. And our government is also called the Oireachtas, which is the combination of the two houses, the upper house and the lower house, and that's still called the Oireachtas. And so we have feshes here maybe about 5 times a year, and they bring judges from all over the world. And so sometime, I mean, have a look at, I think it's the North American Fish Commission, and come along and have a look. You know, and the kids work really, really, really hard. Those girls work. They come at least. Are you living 7 days a week in the studio right now? Yeah. And last year, we got second at the World Championships. So, in London. So we brought 56 world medals back to San Francisco from London last year. So we're under no pressure this year, of course, going to Montreal. In 1930, the government was set up, and the Irish Republic was set up in 1922. And then in 1930, they decided there's all this Irish dancing stuff going on. We need to regulate it, and we need to see what's actually happening. And so they thought, who can organize that? And the Irish Language Commission, which had been set up earlier, they decided they would set up a commission to look into Irish dancing. And we're still called the commission, and we're still under the umbrella of the Irish language people all these years later. So Commission Laoghaire Gaelica was set up back in 1930, and that's the organization we all belong to today. So I think we'll have a hornpipe, which is in 4-4 time. That was a jig, yes. That's actually a good question. You ladies are taking over. I've got two. In 1940, 100% of teachers in the world were male. Right now, it's 4%. So, you know, I mean, I don't know why, really. It is making a bit of a comeback since Riverdance happened. You know, I'm only putting it down to when I was small, we didn't get to, so we had to wear kilts to compete. The boys all had to wear kilts, which, of course, when you're 14 in Ireland in the 1960s or 70s, that wasn't a great thing to do. And then my mother, we would get changed before we'd go to the fesh every Sunday, and we had to go to mass en route. So, of course, I was wearing the kilt en route going to mass, and then you'd walk in, and the priest would say, "You're lovely, will you take the gifts up to the altar?" And so I would have to walk up in front of all my friends. I'm thinking that's the reason, was the kilts. So about 10 years ago, they actually got rid of the kilts, thanks be to God. So we've had a bit of a revival of boys coming back, you know, and Michael Flatley has certainly happened, you know, and the whole television thing and Riverdance and Lord of the Dance. So we're making a bit of a comeback, but it's mainly women. us Irish get everywhere. And the famine happened from 1845. How many of you here are a result of the famine? So, of course, it was an engineered ethnic cleansing, really. Ireland exported more food during those years of the famine than it needed to feed its people. And so we had all these new... So England is there. We had Spain and France trying to get Ireland, or trying to get to England. And, of course, the obvious weak spot was not mainland Europe, because they were pretty well defended, was Ireland. And so they wanted rid of... Because they didn't have enough soldiers and money to fight two fronts. And so they decided they would put all their energy and money into fighting the French and the Spanish and the Germans and whoever else was fighting them on the east side of Britain. But Ireland was on the west side and was very weak. And so they tried to put soldiers in there, and of course all the revolutions, that didn't work. So they decided, well, we'll just get rid of the Irish. And so we had what was called plantation. And they took all these Presbyterians from Scotland and places, and they were very loyal to King Henry and whoever else, all the other kings down along. And they said, right, if you're really loyal to us, we'll just give you a bit of Ireland. And Ireland at one point had more gentry homes than per mile, square mile, than any other country in the world. And that was, they were all gifts from the English king. And so the English king would give you a parcel of land, and it was up to you how you got rid of the people that were happened to be living on, inconveniently living on your land. And so they upped the rents so people couldn't, and then they engineered the famine. Unfortunately, I mean, nature played its part too. The one breed of potato that was susceptible to blight was the one that they had all the Irish eat. So that one breed of potato got the blight, and so it failed, and so the British... they didn't want to feed the people because this was an easy way out. So they very kindly booked their passage to America. They hired ships and gave them free tickets. They also upped their rents to a point where they couldn't pay them. And then if you didn't pay them, they just came along with a battering ram and they knocked your house down, set fire to it, and then you were homeless. So you really had no choice. And the population of Ireland dropped 25% in 5 years. And so they got to New York. And they were met, this land of that they thought was going to be fantastic, and of course they were met with the signs, no Irish, no blacks, no dogs. And they were in New York, and they were mixing with the African-American community, and that's where we get tap dancing today, which is... and I lost my train of thought now. So that was how the American... Or that huge influx of Irish to America at the time, and then, of course, the gold rush over here, and we get everywhere. And then we came to the 20th century, and King George at the time said, if the Irish go and fight on the front line for us, the British, we will give you independence. And he offered them a shilling. And some of them, so this was really the root of our civil war in the 20s. And so they basically, so half this room decided, that's a good idea. I'll go off and fight for the British, I'll take the shilling, we'll be back in 3 weeks anyhow, and then we'll get our independence. So off they went, and of course 2 years later, they're literally on the front line at the Somme and places being shoved onto the front lines. And so the women were stuck at home with no money, and they had no way of feeding their families, and so the munitions factories in Birmingham, in England, which is about an hour and a half north of London, that's where all the factories were, and all these Irish women went to Birmingham to work in the munitions factories at the time, and that's why today, even today, Irish dancing in Birmingham is huge. There is a huge Irish dance, and it's all down to a lady called Marita Armstrong, who was one of those workers in World War I who went and danced, who went to make munitions for the people at the front line. So, of course, the Irish are, half them are away in Germany or in the Somme in France or Belgium. And the other half are sitting at home, and they're thinking, right, this is our chance. The Germans are sending them weapons, and so that's when the 1916 Rising happened, and eventually led to our independence. However, those poor soldiers who went off to war, they came home in British soldiers following that revolution. They came home in British uniforms, and they were rejected by their families, literally, as being traitors. And the whole memorial that was built by the king at the time, he built this amazing park just in Dublin near Houston Station. It was left fall into ruin until our current president restored it about 5 years ago. And so they were really the lost heroes of our revolution, those ones that went off to fight that British army. But Birmingham today, and funny enough, California has the biggest and best team dancing schools in the world. So it's always a big battle between California and the Midlands of England every year. So team dances, Cayley dances, there's a big kind of an argument in Ireland. There's two kinds of team dancing. If you go to Ireland, funny enough, you might think you're going to be inundated with people that can do Cayley dancing. Nobody can do it. It's been a lost thing. And the reason is the gentry, those English gentry that took all the land, they built their big houses, and then for fun, they would build these gorgeous little cottages. There's one in Kerr called the Swiss Cottage, and they would pretend to be poor. And they would have little picnics for their friends at their little cottage, their little thatched cottage. And they would dance these folk dances. And, of course, they came from the French court. So all these Irish musicians coming back from Paris and from the French court brought these kind of square dances back from France. And the English gentry, the Georgians, took them on board. And they created what we now call our Cayley dances. And then in 1930, when the commission was set up, there was no record of these dances, and everybody in every village did them slightly differently. So this man called Tomás O'Farrelly, he travelled around mainly Northern Ireland and South Armagh. He went around and collected all those dances and wrote them down, and there's now 30 of those in a book that we all have to study diligently for our exams, and they're like a knitting pattern, and you forget them the minute you come out, but it's, you know, lady take gents, left hand and right, and all that kind of stuff. So I would like two volunteers, males, please. Jenna and Emma, can you come in, please? So we're going to teach you a waltz of Limerick. Would you like to ask two gentlemen to dance? You only have to walk, trust me. You, good man. What's your name?
Jim.
Or Seamus in Irish. You're not going to leave Seamus all on his own. Come on. Have we one more?
Patrick.
Padraig. Yes. Chasseur, up you come. In his fantastic hat. So we have round dances, we have square dances, and we have what's called progressive dances. So I'm going to talk you through exactly how we're going to do this. Right. So the gent always keeps the lady to his right side. We love a feather. So the gent raises his hand, palm up, and the lady is always to his right, and he takes the lady's hand. And you always start with the right foot, so you point your right foot in front, and we do what's called a leap two, three. You can just walk, unless you want to be adventurous, but you can do it. So the walls of Limerick is a city in the southwest, and it did have a complete wall around it. The only city, I believe, now in Ireland that still has its complete wall is Derry in Northern Ireland, but there are still parts of the walls in Limerick. And so this is a progressive dance. So basically, there could be 100 couples down the hall, down the room, and you would do the dance, and then you move on to the next couple and do it again, do it again, do it again, and do it again until the musicians stop. So we're going to advance for two, leap two threes or jump two threes, and reverse, retire for two. So you can do, so one, two, three, go. Advance two, three, in two, three, back two, three, back two, three, in two, three, in two, three, back two, three, and back two, three. Drop hands. Now, ladies are going to cross. They're going to exchange places with the left foot, doing what we call the sidestep, which is always seven steps and two threes at the end. One, two, three, go. Hendo three, car kuche shot. Hendo three, hendo three. Now the gents are going to do the same thing with the right foot. So five, six, seven, go. One, two, three, keep the right foot in front. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Hendo three, hendo three. Now, you're going to seven out from the center. So like you're opening a cupboard door. So you give the lady your hand. And you're going to seven out from the center, do your two threes, and then you're going to come back. Five, six, seven, go. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Hendo three, hendo three. Back two, three, four, five, six, seven. Hendo three. Now, turn to face your partner. Now we're going to take crossed hands. This is where it gets tricky, guys. So, right hand in right on top, and left hand in left underneath. This is about as close as you ever get to a girl in Ireland, by the way, at a Cayley. This was intimate. So, now, we always spin clockwise, moving anti-clockwise. So doing leap two threes, you're going to spin around the opposite couple, you're going to end up exactly where you are now, but on the other side, facing the other way. Get that? So, 5, 6, 7, go. Round 2, 3, all the way back to your new place. Keep going all the way around, and then you're going to end up on the left of your lady facing the next couple. So there will be an next couple. Fantastic. Can we have music? Can we have a real thing?
So,
yeah, so we're going to do it all now to music. You can. Just to confuse everybody. So advance and retire twice. 5, 6. Awesome and good. Now ladies, cross over. Gents, stand. Now gents, off you go. Now take your ladies right hand in right. Take your partner's hand and you swing round the house, they go. Nobody cares in Ireland what you do with your feet. It's all about being in the right place at the right time with the correct hand in the air. And if you can manage that, you're good to go. So that's Ceilidh dancing, and half the population think, oh, that's terribly Protestant, that's terribly English, and it all came from France, and it's not ours at all. And so they opt to do what's called set dancing, and I don't have any set dancers here today, but that's kind of done. And if you go to Ireland today and you go to Ceilidh, it's all set dancing you do. I refuse to do it myself because... It was actually brought to Ireland by the Scottish soldiers. And it was danced in the military barracks. And all the ladies would run off to meet these gorgeous soldiers from Scotland or whatever. So we're a bit hypocritical, really. You know, we criticize everybody, and yet most of the stuff we have is so interlinked with Scotland and England. And, you know, it's not Irish at all. And yet we claim it now to be our own. And really, it's not. You know, it really is the history of the British Isles and... or Britain and Ireland, as I'm supposed to call it, and the rest of Europe. You know, we have mazurkas, we have polkas, and they were not Irish to begin with. We dance the fling, we dance, in Clare where I come from, it's the Caledonian set. I mean, Caledonia is the Latin name for Scotland. And so, very little of it is Irish, you know. so then we had 1916 come along, we had all of that happen, and then the 80s in Ireland was just awful. You know, there was... terrible. I mean, it was the second really mass immigration out of Ireland, and at that point we had, I think, the Donnelly visas, what they called at the time, where there was, I think it was 30,000 visas were given to illegal immigrants in this country, or 40,000. I can't remember. Anyhow, half of them Ted Kennedy got for the Irish. At the time, he did this amazing deal in Washington, and so most people that you meet here today actually came in that flood, you know. So, who else is ready to dance? We'd like to see a treble reel. Actually, no. Can we have a slip jig? Sorry. Emer. We'll start with a slip jig, actually. So a slip jig is in 9/8 time. 9/8 is unique to Irish traditional music. And it's 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3, 3, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3, 3, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So it's 9 beats in every bar. And it is now only danced by women or young ladies. So, and it's supposed to be graceful. And I say that every day. So there's a few movements that are really very unique to Irish dancing. Can I have some of the girls in, please?
Yeah.
Somebody in heavies and somebody.
You're getting them all.
I'm getting them all. So, I'm fortunate enough to be an adjudicator, and I travel all over the world adjudicating, which is a real honor. And, you know, Irish dancing is really for everybody. I mean, you can start it at 50, you can start it at 5, maybe not competitively start at 50, but you can certainly enjoy it. You know, you don't have to be. But there are the way we judge is primarily is timing, carriage, execution, and steps. So timing is the most important thing. This is a percussive dance form. I mean, like I spoke about at the beginning, this is how tunes were passed on from person to person during those awful times, way back in the penal times. And so timing is the number one thing. You have every beat has a note and every note has a beat. That's what my teacher always used to drum into me. And then carriage is next. So anyone that's ever taken an Irish dance form class, your teacher's going to tell you pull up and go down at exactly the same time. So as you lift, you also have to do downbeats into the floor. So you're going to make that power into the floor while pulling up. And that's not such an easy thing to do. So the arms should not be stiff. They should be completely relaxed. You actually tighten your tummy muscles and lift your sternum. And that's, so see, you're trying it out there. Very good. And you just relax. Your hands should be two coats hanging on the hanger side. They should not move. It should be controlled from here. The minute you stiffen your arms, it's going to stick out. And then timing, carriage, execution. So execution is basically cross and turn out. So when I danced, we used to be able to cross kind of here, which was easy. Now they have to cross over here. You pull up and turn out with their hips and going their arms. It's more difficult than it was. And then steps. Every teacher makes up their own steps. Apart from those traditional set dances that we talked about earlier on that are we inherited from the dancing masters. So every step you saw this evening pretty much were made up by our teachers. And then they would be scored as well when you get to a competition. You know how difficult they are, how interesting they are. And there's a few moves. So a high click is one. We have a back click. So can we have a high click? So high clicks, as I said earlier, high clicks in the 30s were here. They're now kind of all the way up here. So can somebody just show us a high click? And the reason it's called a click is obviously because the shoes, if you're in heavies, you should make the noise. Can we have a high click, somebody? And you got click, brilliant. And we have a back click. Gonna, it doesn't matter, it says you tick at the back. And we have a double click. You just do a double click and you get all those tickings. We have a rock. Who's the best rocker in the world? This is unique to Irish dancing, actually, which is a rock. You just have to keep your knees really straight and pull up. We have a cross key, which is... it's kind of an old-fashioned move, and they don't really do it anymore. So it's cross over and wrap. So that would be a cross key. So they're kind of some of the traditional moves that we try and incorporate. So I want everybody... So a reel, just to finish up, and then we'll have some questions and answers, but a treble reel would be the fastest steps that we do. They're in heavy shoes generally, and it's the one you normally see at exhibitions and everything. So can we have a treble reel? And you're not tapping on. Thank you. So any questions just before we finish up?
It's been a pleasure.
Yes.
Tell us about the dresses, the traditions.
The dresses, they're a bit of a bone of contention for all of us, to be honest. Costumes traditionally, there's a manuscript in Ireland called the Book of Kells. Has anybody heard of it, seen it? It's just the most beautiful book that was illustrated by the monks. The fly sheet of which was signed by Queen Victoria on her visit to Dublin, by the way. Like you would, you know. And so traditionally, because of hand embroidery, I remember when I danced, mothers would start at the start of the year and they would embroider all year at the front of the hall, and then they would hand the costume over with about this much embroidery, and then they'd start again as the kids grew. And then, so of course, I don't know if it's the teachers, I don't know if it's the mothers, I don't know who's, but it all went a bit crazy. They discovered glitter, and they discovered machines, and they discovered that, you know, my daughter has to have a bigger, brighter dress than your daughter. And so, you know, and I mean, but in fairness, I think Irish dancing has now gone so huge. I mean, really, our world championships is almost too big for Ireland. We don't really have the venues anymore. And so you're putting these 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds on these huge stages, in these huge auditoria. And so those old-fashioned little costumes with a little bit of mammy's embroidery just kind of doesn't work. You know, when at the Worlds, you probably have 180 kids who qualify. Now, if you're qualifying at the World Championships, we maybe have 180 in every competition here in the Western region, in every age, and maybe the top 13 or 14 of those qualify to go to the World Championship. Those 180 are the top level of 6 levels. So they're really the pyramid. So they're really 13 kids representing several thousand kids here in California. And so then they get to Montreal, and the first round, you do 3 rounds at a championship. You've got a heavy round, which is in the heavy shoes, that's a hornpipe or a jig, and then you have a light round, and then the top third go back to do a set dance, which is the ones on your own. And so as a judge, the first round might take 4 hours. And so everybody's mammy wants their kid to be seen and get back into that top third. And so I think it's just, as time's progressed, it's gone a bit crazy. And so those dresses generally cost in the region of $2,000 to $2,500. Most of them come from Ireland. So, you know, but there has been, the commission keep bringing in rules. We're going to limit the amount of embroidery. We're going to limit the amount of glitter. We're going to limit this. And somehow they find a little way around it. And so they get worse. And so... And so I don't know what the answer is. I'd love to see it all. I don't even see the costumes when I'm judging, to be honest with you. You know, I just, you know, good kids stand out if they're in a black bag. Yes.
So I'd like to just, one second, I'd like to remind our audience that they're listening to Michael Dillon speaking about the allure of Irish dancing at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco.
What did women wear over the ages? Did they wear short skirts in a Catholic country?
God.
Okay, so how did they dance in a long skirt?
You know,
skirt?
If you look, there's some really interesting Pathé News clips on YouTube from the first fashions back in the 20s, and they were in long, the itchiest kind of, it was called bonnie material, which was a wool, and our kilts were all made of it too, and I can clarify that it really was itchy. And so with maybe a little Celtic knot on the bottom, but the biggest capes ever. And they, funnily enough, had pom-poms on their shoes. But, you know, things change. You know, things move on. You know, but it was great big capes and great big dresses and shoes like, you know, dinner walking shoes. But if you look on the old Pathé News clips, you'll see them on YouTube. Yes.
And what about, what's with the wigs?
I knew that was going to come up.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Everybody kind of despairs of it. You know, and we go back to, so you're 16 and you really want a trendy haircut and you're, so I'm going to tell you, no, you can't have it, you're going to have long hair. And then we're going to put it up in rollers so you can't sleep the night before. And then, so you've just flown however many miles from California to London and you're jet lagged anyhow. Now you've got a head full of rollers because it kind of covers up the head full and all that kind of stuff. And then you're going to be under those lights for about 5 seconds and all those curls are going to fall. And before you know it, you're just going to look a mess. So this wig, it's just part of the costume, really. I think, you know, you can. I mean, not everybody wears wigs now. There really has been some people. And buns are big at the minute. Buns are really in right now. And so it just, you know, a competition will last. Those kids start at 8 a.m. They may get their results at 9 that night. it's hard to keep a hairdo that good for that long, you know, and it's just practicality, really, you know, but we all hate them.
But they're so big.
Some are, I know.
I mean, they're distracting.
I know. Look at Emo with her big hair. She's the biggest hair. We just have to hide it in a way.
Yeah, basically, like, I could just say, as a girl who used to dance, and it's not long that I've retired. I only retired 2 years ago from competition. So basically, at the Worlds, as Michael said, there's huge competitions, and to fit all the competitions in to a daily schedule, and they've only 7 days to fit everybody in, competitions start at 8 a.m. So if your competition starts at 8 a.m., you have to be in the hall ready to dance at 7. It's a commission rule. You have to be there ready to dance a full hour early. That means hair, makeup, everything done, just in case, for some reason, they have to start early. So that then means if you want to have your hair looking perfect, as the ladies in the room probably know, you would have to be up at like 4 to wash it and set it and dry it and curl it and hairspray it so that it lasts for literally 12 hours, because often the results don't happen till 12 hours later. So I have curly hair, as you can probably see, and everyone used to always say, and why do they put a wig on you? And oh, why wouldn't your own hair do? I would have never, ever, ever worn my own hair just because the wig is so easy. You just catch your hair and you tie it in a bun on the top of your head and you clip the wig in and your hair looks perfect for the full and entire day. It is ease is the biggest part of it. And I know it does. It looks silly. It really does look silly to people outside. When you see it every single weekend of your entire life, you don't see, like Michael said about the costumes, you don't see the wigs anymore. You just see the dancer. And when you're on a huge stage, again, like Michael said, a huge stage, huge lights, actors wear makeup, actors wear tan, actors wear wigs. And Irish dancing is an art form just like acting is. So it's all just ease, number one, and to get the full image looking right. People like to look at things that look good. And if your hair is good and you've a nice dress and you've the tan and the makeup and you look good, people are going to look at you. And that's all where it kind of comes from.
And not every mammy is great at doing hair.
So is there any cinema on Irish dancing?
Have there been any directors that have filmed Irish dancing?
Movies, actually. There was a really good documentary made about 2 years ago at the World Championships called Jig, J-I-G. And that really was a really good insight into our mad world. It really is an addiction. It's crazy. But have a look at that. I think it was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is or not. But yeah. And that's really good. RTE, Radio Televisión, and the National Television, they've made several series about Irish dancing and following kids around the world and stuff. You know, I don't know that I agree with them, because it catapults 10-year-olds into the stardom, and suddenly they're competing, and they're on Facebook and they're on Instagram, and suddenly they're big stars, and there's all these awful message boards where people are talking about those 10-year-olds. So it's been great in one way and another way. You know, I'm not all that happy about it. You know, but that's progress, I guess. You know.
Yeah. I think.
Guy director as well. I almost saw a corollary to the wheel dancing. You know, where you have a color. I'm saying some things evolve from things like
that. Yeah, they do, absolutely. You know, and Irish dancing has been great for not being rigid in what we need to do. So I think that's why it's the appeal worldwide. You know, it changes constantly. If somebody comes from Japan and they have a new little step, great, we all applaud it. You know, so. And we, you know, clogging in down in the south and the Appalachian dancing, they're all connected. You know, and we keep revisiting those dance forms and revisiting those little moves and steps and taking them and using them again.
Are the dancers doing counting 1 through 8? Or is it just mostly the beat of the music they're listening to? For instance, I noticed a number of examples this evening. The dancers let the music play for quite a bit, quite a few notes before they started to.
There's always an 8-bar introduction. So they always stand there for 8 bars. I tell them constantly just to listen to the beats of the music. It doesn't always work. So I guess the steps, you know, when you start counting 1, 2, 3 and 2, 2, 3. You know, when you're a beginner. And then you get to a point where the steps are just too fast and you can no longer count. And at that point, you should have drilled it so much you can just listen to the music. And so you should be reflecting the music, you know. My partner Steve over there, he's always talking about it's the most soulless dance form ever. And I'm always trying to tell him, actually it's not, you know. We may look like it is, but it is really about interpreting that music and trying to portray it in your dance, you know. And like any other dance form.
But it doesn't always come across because us Irish are so reserved and, you know, we can't show emotion. You know, I always say you can be anything you want in Ireland as long as you don't talk about it. and I really think that's the same because we had such a rigid background with the church and the English rule and everything is very... And so, you know, but we do listen to... It should be a direct reflection to the music, yeah.
Two questions. Do the girls have ballet backgrounds since they're on point a lot?
No, and, no they don't, actually.
And also their soft shoes, are they modified ballet shoes?
No, not really. You know, I don't. Do you want to come out and show us? Again, they've changed quite substantially because, of course, the better your arch, the better. And the new shoes give every kid a great arch. So whatever the people at the shoe manufacturers have done, they do have that split sole. But no, they're not ballet shoes. And they have to have this long lace and stuff. Ballet is fundamentally different at the knees. And so you can see... I hate kids that go to ballet as well. Apart from the feet. Feet are great, but the knees do stick out quite a lot. And so I'm constantly saying, pull up, and the knees are going, you know, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, rather than just at the feet, you know. So ballet can be really good for arch and turnout, but from the ankles up, it's not great, really.
Right. We have time for one more question.
On the competitions, is there one country that stands out as producing a lot of winners to
America.
The... Oh, really? Really?
Really, you know, when I...
Because we have so many people.
No, you know, when I danced, we used to sit at the Mansion House in Dublin, which is the round room in the mayor's house next to the House of the Parliament. It's way too small now. It's, you know, I remember being huge, but it's probably not much bigger than this. And we used to know the Americans because they always had this great smile and they'd come out and they really never even recalled. And now they're winning everything. You know, the American kids, and, you know, I came here 4 years ago, and I'm thanking my lucky stars every day because the kids in America are such amazingly phenomenal workers. You know, absolute credit to Americans. They take it, and they run with it, and they work really, really hard. And back in Ireland, it's like, Irish dancing, you joke with me. You know, but Irish dancing, I'm not doing that. That's, you know, and so they're far too busy chasing fellas off down the local nightclub or whatever, but... America, and not just Irish Americans, very few, actually, we have a location in Walnut Creek and there's no Irish, or very few Irish in Walnut Creek, and then our city class is all freckles and big ears like mine, and, you know, so it's interesting to see the, but we have every nationality, you know, in our class, and they work so hard, and they just love it, and they're with us 7 days a week, and that would never happen in Ireland. Just, you know, so.
That's a great, great ending. How about if all the girls come out to take a bow for their dancing? Come on out. I just say your name.
Oh.
Just give me your name. What's your first name?
Okay, I'm Jenna. I'm Lauren.
I'm Dania.
I'm Taryn.
I'm Camille.
I'm Annie.
I'm Fiona.
I'm Fiona.
And so ends another event at the Commonwealth Club in its 114th year. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. Thanks a lot, Michael.
Thank you.
If you want any information about the dance school or anything, you certainly can get it from anybody that you've seen up here and get the information on classes or anything like that. But thank you very much for coming. I'm glad you came and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Ladies.